The Adventures of Maud West, Lady Detective. Secrets and Lies in the Golden Age of Crime. Written by Susanna Stapleton and read by Susanna Stapleton and Claire Willey.
Prologue. The Lady Vanishes. One evening in 1939, Maud West, London's leading lady detective, locked the door to her Bloomsbury office and promptly disappeared, never to be seen again. Her exploits over the past 34 years had taken her around the world, snooping in drug dens, grand country houses, mental asylums, and more. She had unmasked blackmailers, caught adulterers, foiled jewel thieves, and shut down cults, all on behalf of a client list that could have been lifted from the pages of Debrett's. The press loved her, a real lady sleuth in the golden age of crime, and newspapers across the globe reported tales of her daring do. And now she was gone. As one would expect, Maud West had amassed a fair few nemeses over the years, but she wasn't abducted that night in 1939, nor was she killed or harmed in any way. She didn't hide out in a Harrogate hotel, or wake up swathed in bandages, hurtling across Germany on a Hitchcockian train. She simply ceased to exist, if it could be said that Maud West had ever truly existed at all. That said, she used to be easy enough to find. If there was no London telephone directory to hand, a quick glance at the personals column of any major newspaper would do the job. London's Lady Detective, Maud West. Every kind of detective work undertaken with secrecy and dispatch. Divorce shadowings, secret inquiries, etc. Male and female staff. Albion House, 59, New Oxford Street. Telephone, Museum 5120. See? There she is. Chapter 1. The Documents in the Case. In all good faith to other women who would become detectives, I would utter one word of advice. Don't. Maud West, 1914. Maybe I should have walked away at the first sign of deceit. After the incident with the bearskin rug, perhaps, or during that ridiculous car chase across Hampstead Heath. In Paris? Or Rio? There were so many times I could have turned back and just left her to it. But then I would never have met the Countess or the Prince of Lovers, or learned how to rig an office safe with chloroform or whip up a disguise using only a piece of orange peel and a wisp of goat hair. I'd never have laughed with her or wept for her. I'd never have seen what lay beneath. Besides, I'm not sure I even had a choice. There was almost a sense of inevitability about the whole thing. Looking back, you could say that our paths began to converge on Boxing Day 1984, when the magnificent Joan Hickson, in her first Tweedy outing as Miss Marple, pottered into my family's sitting room to investigate the body in the library. Just shy of my 12th birthday, I was immediately and irreparably entranced. By the whodunit, yes, and the frocks, the hats, the gigolos and jazz fiends, but most of all, by the idea of all those delicious secrets lying so perilously close to the surface. Before long, I'd sought out the books for my own private feasts of sparkling cyanide and arsenic-laced prawns, and taken up snooping on the side. By the time I was 13, I was eyeing up louche lipstick in the village chemist, sneaking the occasional cigarillo, and dabbling in a bit of light blackmail. It was only the threat and subsequent reality of boarding school that put paid to an otherwise promising future as a jazz age reprobate. Somewhere along the way, my talent for muckraking was guided into a career in history where it was thought I could do less harm. But I never gave up the detective stories. If I learned anything from my 2-year incarceration in a ladies' college, it was that there's nothing like a good murder to lift the spirits. As the years went on, I put this to good use in what became something of an annual ritual. In the darkest days of winter, I'd take a couple of weeks off work, build a nest by the fire, and escape into a world of daggers, poisons, wrath, and revenge. It never failed.